Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. Newsmakers is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wisi.org/donate or text WISI to 44321. This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
Hello and welcome to Newsmakers. I'm your host, Lisa Pugh. Universities of Wisconsin System President Jay Rothman has been traveling statewide. He's been meeting with more than 1,000 people in numerous groups since the beginning of the year, making the case for his $855 million budget request. While Republicans say that amount is unrealistic, Rothman says it is necessary to prevent tuition hikes and to keep remaining branch campuses from closing. We welcome President Rothman to Newsmakers.
Thank you. It's great to be with you today, Lisa.
Well, that's a lot of travel just since the beginning of January that you've been doing. What's been your biggest takeaway from these conversations you've been having?
You know, I think the biggest takeaway and the biggest shock that I get when I tell people Wisconsin is 43rd out of 50 in terms of public funding for its university system. That's not the Wisconsin I knew. I grew up in the state my entire life, and education has been so important to be 43rd out of 50, particularly when we look at Minnesota, Iowa, Illinois, and Michigan are all in the top 10.
So are people shocked
in the
by that
10.
When you
They are. I hear audible gasps when I say that, and that has surprised me, but I think it is reflective of where we stand and why we need to do something about that.
The last state biennial budget was a bit contentious for the universities of Wisconsin system with this battle over diversity, equity, and inclusion. We know there's some movement on the federal end to talk about DEI. Do you think that the state has addressed, have you addressed state concerns over DEI?
You know, when I started about 2.5 years ago, one of the first things I did was I asked our chancellors, what do we want to do? What are we trying to achieve with our diversity and inclusion efforts? And really started there. And I think we concluded that the definition of diversity needs to be broader. It's not just typically, you know, historically underrepresented groups. It's religious beliefs, it's political ideology, it's veteran status, it's disabled status, and really look at it on a much broader concept. But then we said, it's about the individual, and it's about individual students and our students wanting to be successful. So from the time that we recruit them and their sense of belonging on our campus, which leads to their retention, graduation, and ultimately when they leave and go on to their careers, and we want them to be successful. So that's really what we focused on in terms of diversity.
So do you think you've addressed all the questions from state GOP on DEI?
I think we'll see as we go through this conversation, but that's been our focus. It's really about student success. And then the second component is really making sure that our students are having a level of cultural fluency when they graduate. And what I mean by that is that we all see the world from where we sit, and it's important to understand that people across the globe are going to view things differently. And we need to understand that, and how do we deal with that, and how do we approach that as our graduates compete in a global environment, which they will undoubtedly do.
Do you expect this year's budget process to be any easier than it was 2 years ago?
You know, I think I'm encouraged by the support from Governor Evers of the Universities of Wisconsin. I've had some productive conversations with legislators on both sides of the aisle, and we're going to continue those conversations because I come back to, we're here to serve the state of Wisconsin. Wisconsin is in a war for talent. We are not graduating enough people right now to fill the jobs that our great employers in the state are creating. And if we don't fill those jobs are going to go elsewhere, outside of the state, never to return. And I think that's what our focus is. We are here to help Wisconsin win the war for talent, and we are hopeful that the legislature will view that as an important investment, not as an expenditure, but an important investment in the current generations of Wisconsinites and the future generations.
I know you've been talking a lot statewide about Wisconsin's ranking as 43rd in public funding for our university system. What's your case to the average taxpayer? If I don't have a campus in my backyard, why should I care about that ranking?
I think you would care about it for a couple of different reasons. One is opportunity. And accessibility. And I'm not talking about, you know, we talk about we have a huge need for nurses and teachers and engineers and data scientists. But I take it and take one step further. What do you want for your children? What do you want for your grandchildren? What do you want for other family members? Do you want them to have the same opportunity that prior generations of Wisconsinites have? That's what we are advocating for. That's why we think this is important. And that's when I talk to people, have that conversation and say, listen, what do you want your kids to have? What do you want your grandkids to have?
Wisconsin also has a robust technical college system mm-hmm. that grants two-year associate degrees, technical diplomas and certificates. How does the funding of that system factor into that ranking or into Wisconsin's overall investment in public university education?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the technical college play a critical role in our economy, and they have a little bit different funding source than we do. They get general purpose revenue from the state, as well as they have taxing authority in their individual districts. So the funding sources are a bit, quite a bit different, actually, in the scheme of things. I don't want to compare ourselves to the tech colleges because I think we have a different mission. They have a very vocational mission. We have a mission that is creating the engineers and the physicians and the nurses and so forth kind of going forward. Both of those have to work well together. It is a symbiotic relationship between the universities and the tech colleges. They are great partners of ours, but we're simply looking at the funding that we get. And as you think about our economy as it increasingly moves into a technology-driven, knowledge-based economy, we're going to have people who can function in that environment, help create it, one, and then function in that environment. We view ourselves as preparing students for jobs that do not yet exist. And I think that's the way we're looking at our mission to help serve the state of Wisconsin.
We mentioned that various Republican leaders, including Speaker Voss and Leader Lemahue, have called that $850 million budget request unrealistic. What have your latest conversations with Republican leaders looked like?
I mean, I've had continuing good conversations with both the Speaker and Senator Lemahue and others in the legislature. But I look at it from this standpoint. The universities of Wisconsin over a decade plus were, in my humble opinion, neglected in terms of funding. And we had our tuition frozen for a decade. That has put us in a very difficult financial position. And all we're trying to do with the $855 million ask is get us to the national median, get Wisconsin to average. Under the circumstances, I don't think that's an unreasonable ask.
Are you seeing that legislators on both sides of the aisle are concerned about that ranking?
I think they are. I would certainly hope that they are. I mean, I think when I'm talking out in the public and I hear that audible gasp when people hear we're 43rd out of 50 in terms of our funding, that makes a difference. And it's not the ranking per se. It is what that ranking means. And it means, a threat to accessibility. It means a threat to affordability for future students coming into the universities of Wisconsin. And one of the hallmarks of the universities of Wisconsin in its mission to support the state, it has been both accessible and affordable for our population. We want to make sure that that goes forward. And along those lines, I have said very publicly, if we do get $855 million, I will not recommend tuition increases for the 2 years of the biennium. We will not move to close any branch campuses that are otherwise slated for closure during that period of time.
Are those things at risk specifically?
Yes, they are at risk if we don't get funded at
That's
the level
that
we...
That's part of that contingency plan if your request...
If we have to, we're going to have to look at some things that, quite frankly, are painful for me to even think about, but necessary because ultimately I'm responsible for the financial viability and sustainability of our universities, and we'll take the steps that are necessary to ensure that we do that. But that will impact accessibility and it will impact affordability in ways that I don't think are in the best interest of our state.
There have been two straight years of enrollment increases across the system, but I know that enrollment numbers for the universities of Wisconsin have been in a steady decline, really, since 2010. That's been some of the criticism from Republican leaders. They say that the universities of Wisconsin system hasn't really right-sized as there's been declining enrollment. Is that a fair criticism?
You know, I look at it, and our enrollment is the same level that was in 1992 and 93. So, it ebbs and flows over time. I think the bigger issue that we have, quite frankly, we've been pleased that we've been able to put in some initiatives that have, I think, had an impact on increasing our enrollment. Whether it's a tuition promise that we put in for the class that started in the fall of 2023, which we have funded through some funds that we had, we can't afford to continue to do that. We'll have a smaller tuition promise in for the class that will start in the fall of 2025, in part due to a grant from the Ascendium Group, which I am grateful for. But we need that tuition promise because we know it impacts enrollment. We know the percentage of students attending a University of Wisconsin institution increased from by 100 basis points, one full percentage point increase in that class in fall of 2023.
Have you had any success in getting Republican support for the tuition promise this time around?
We're going to continue to have those conversations because, again, I think this is an investment in the future. And what I've talked to the legislators on both sides I've talked about is that if you went to a University of Wisconsin institution 20 or 30 years ago, you had a tuition promise. You had a tuition promise because at that point the state was funding about 40% of our budget.
It cost less.
And now it was 18. So it cost less. There was an implied tuition promise there that doesn't exist today because of the different funding mechanisms. We are relying more on tuition than we ever have. Tuition is a greater part of our revenue than is the support from the state. But we are going to continue to work on enrollment. We introduced.
What about the direct admit?
That's where I was going.
The first class comes in this fall, and that's this proactive admission for high school students, right?
Correct. We had over 300 high schools participating across the state. We're going to try to grow that number. But 10 of our universities participated in it. And what it does is it students who are based on their high school GPA, and each university sets the standard that it wants to achieve and ensuring that they've taken the prerequisite courses that are required, but are automatically enrolled in our institutions. And I've heard some great stories because I've heard parents come and tell me, they said, you know, my son was really disengaged from school. And then he got this letter and he said, I'm going to college. I have the opportunity. They believe in me. They believe in me. They believe that I can be successful. I'm going to go.
So could be some exciting enrollment numbers this fall.
I think there could be some exciting enrollment numbers, but a direct admission program without a solid tuition promise is not going to be as successful as it should be.
10 of 13 of public universities in the system were facing structural deficit 2 years ago. I know you recently reported that number is down to six. Six with
down
structural
six.
Deficit. What types of changes are those universities having to make to reduce that deficit?
They're having to make anything from cost reductions and looking at what they're spending on supplies to not filling vacancies, in some cases to having to lay people off. Sometimes reducing the programs that they are offering. So our universities, some of them have had to make some very, very painful decisions.
I know that some students and faculty have talked about, they think there's too much emphasis on austerity measures, that those cuts have been too drastic. How do you respond to that?
I think, you know, our universities for a long period of time had been spending more than they were bringing in a lot of cases, and you can't do that long term. And I came out of the private sector. And I understand that at the end of the day, you can't spend more than you bring in for a long period of time. And that's exactly what we were doing. All we're trying to do is get to a break-even spot. And I think that is important because our responsibility is to ensure long-term sustainability. And we're going to have to deal with whatever funding levels we get. If we get additional funding, we will be able to make some investments that I think are necessary to be made. But at the same time, we have to remain vigilant on costs. This is not to solve our structural deficit problem. This is to give us investment to move forward. We have to continue to do work on and ensure that we are spending taxpayer dollars and tuition dollars wisely.
In 2023, I know the system brought in a consultant who reviewed various programs across the system and finances. They found 194 low-enrolled programs and a lack of program monitoring. What types of changes is the system making to address that?
Well, we have for a long time had a process by which new programs are approved that go through the Education Committee and at the Board of Regents and ultimately approved by the full Board of Regents. We're going to be working on a similar process for program discontinuance and program suspension.
When they are low enrolled.
When they are low enrolled. But you have to look at that. There's a variety of different factors, because you can have a low enrolled program that doesn't cost you anything because you've got the infrastructure there, you've got the professors there. That one we will look at very differently. But the fact of the matter is, over the last 3 to 5 years, we have closed over 100 programs. So it's not like this has been just sitting there static. And then in terms of what we're doing, we are also working to address the market demand. Over the last 10 years, there's been a 30% increase in the number of STEM and healthcare graduates in the system, such that right now nearly 40% of our graduates are graduating with either degrees in STEM or healthcare. So we are responding to the marketplace. We want to do so in an even more disciplined manner. This is an evolution. This isn't a change. This isn't going from one direction to another. This is an evolution about how we look at our program array.
Leader LeMahieu was in our studio back in January, mm-hmm. and he said he's yet to see a 30,000-foot view of how the University of Wisconsin system is set up for the future. He talked about maybe there should be fewer four-year colleges. Maybe the remaining universities should be more specialized. From what you just said, you believe that our current system is aligning with workforce needs appropriately?
I do. I mean, and I think we are continually evolving our program array to address the demand that's there in the marketplace, which I think is an important piece. But I think there's other things. In our strategy, we have said we want our universities to define what their distinctive programs are. But at the same time, particularly the 10 regional comprehensives and our polytechnic need to have that broader reach of programs, because there are students who are going to be geographically limited to how far they can go. And if we're going to remain accessible to everyone in Wisconsin, we need to try to find the right balance. But we are also looking at collaborative programs. There's an interesting program that was announced last week or so, where UW La Crosse and UW Platteville got together, and a student can go to La Crosse for 3 years and then transfer to Platteville and for an additional 2 years. And during that period of time, they'll get a Bachelor of Science in Physics from La Crosse and a Bachelor of Science in Engineering from Platteville. Two high-demand degrees that you can get in a 5-year period, which I think is a real benefit. We are focused on shared services, where we do more services centrally to reduce the costs for our universities across the state. So there's a lot of work being done in that space.
What do you say to those who question the need for a liberal arts degree program? Is that something that is no longer needed in our society?
I would disagree with that relatively vehemently, because as I said earlier, we're producing and we're working to prepare students for jobs that do not yet exist. And you think about how AI is going to change our world. How do we look at that? But what a liberal arts degree, and maybe I'm biased because I'm a liberal arts major, but the ability to think critically, the ability to discern fact from fiction, the ability to problem solve, the ability to work in a team and on a collaborative basis, the ability to speak and write articulately, are skill sets that you can transfer into a variety of different areas, depending on how things work. So I think a foundation of the liberal arts and having liberal arts classes are incredibly important. And then we've got to think about, we're not a vocational school. We are teaching people about, you know, the experience in the fine arts. And you think about that and about learning about the human condition and the human experience more generally. Those are valuable things for people to have. And I think that's where the liberal arts continue to be critical. When I sit back, though, and I step back and say, what is the most important skill set you can learn? And that is that critical thought.
You mentioned artificial intelligence. How are our universities preparing for changes related to AI?
I mean, we just announced that the Regents just approved both a BA and a BS in artificial intelligence at La Crosse. I think they're going to be, you know, certainly doing that more broadly. I look at it in a variety of ways. I think, one, our curriculum needs to evolve so it has principles of AI embedded in everything. Because if you're a political science major or a psychology major, you need to understand some of that just as much as if you're in computer science. Not at the same depth, but you need to understand that. Our universities need to be involved in the development of the next generation of artificial intelligence. How is that going to work? I think that's a critical role for the universities to play. And finally, I think our universities are uniquely positioned to help define guardrails for artificial intelligence, because it can be incredibly powerful, but it also has some risks associated with it. And I think our universities can be in a particularly good position in helping policymakers define where those guardrails need to be. So I think it's those three aspects that I see us being, you know, very deeply involved as AI develops into the future.
The Legislative Study Committee on the Future of the University of Wisconsin System just issued a report, includes 17 recommendations. Some of those have bipartisan support, including ones that would grant some level of bonding authority to the universities of Wisconsin System. What would that mean to the system?
What it would mean is it would be a little bit faster to execution as opposed to going through the historic remuneration process, and these would be buildings that we would be funding on our own through tuition dollars and so forth. So it would mean a little bit faster speed to execution, and in this environment, being able to move quickly is important. But you know, we appreciate that there will be guardrails around that if it were adopted. But you know, we're one of the very few institutions that don't have that ability.
So it's a good change.
Yeah, in my judgment, it would be a very good change. Yes.
The committee also discussed ways to gather more information about students who leave before completing a degree. How big of a problem is student retention on the University of Wisconsin System campuses?
You know, I think we are continuing to work to try to improve our retention rates. There are some students for whom they come and this just isn't for them. And we have to respect that and move on. But there are some students who we can help. And that's one of the things that we are focused on in providing incentives to chancellors to say, how do we do a better job on retention and then ultimately graduation?
Because chancellors will have their raises tied to student retention.
They will have a potential incentive payment tied to them hitting targets in terms of retention numbers. And it was something we wanted to try. We've got to be innovative. We've got to be different than we have been historically. This is one opportunity. We'll see how it works. I'm not saying it's the be-all and end-all, but it is one measure that we're sending about the importance of retention. And obviously, it's not just the chancellors who are involved in retention. It is the university in and of itself. But there are levers the chancellors can pull to try to drive that retention. And they understand the importance, and they always have understood the importance. But this is where some of the services that we need to be able to provide. You know, we have students who are food insecure or housing insecure, or a $200 car repair bill away from having to drop out. How can we help them, meet them halfway to make sure that they stay in school? Because it's not, these aren't giveaways. These are students who are giving up the opportunity cost of going on to higher education, making the commitment to see it through because they know it can change the trajectory of their lives. And I think particularly about first-generation students who are walking into somewhat of an unknown, sometimes with support from their families, sometimes without support from their families. I've talked a lot about those students have more courage in their little finger than I think I have in my entire body, because they are making that leap of faith because they believe it will change the trajectory of their lives, and I believe that. And that's why I'm excited when you see them, but we've got to make sure we help them. We've got to make sure we're there for them.
More of those study recommendations also deal with transparency around how GPR funding is allocated across the system. Do you think the current process is fair and transparent?
I think part of the challenge with the current process is it's been there for a while, and I've only been here 2.5 years, but during that period of time, on an inflation-adjusted basis, our budgets have been contracting. So it is hard to reallocate reallocating from one university is going to push another university over the edge. Secondly, it's a lot more complicated than I think people acknowledge, at least at first blush. It's not just on an FTE basis, because if you did it on a student FTE basis, it would be pretty easy. But you have to look beyond that. If you look at a Madison, for example, which is a research behemoth, I mean, just world-class research that's going on at the university in Madison, their funding and their cost structure is very different. You have to look at costs of programs that are being offered by the universities. You've got to look at, you know, what kind of support systems do that particular set of students need? Where is the geographic location? And is that important for Wisconsin to have a university in that location? All of those have to factor into that allocation discussion. And again, it's something that if we were funded at that median level, we would have more ability to adjust accordingly moving forward.
Last year, we learned that the University of Wisconsin-Madison bumped up two spots in its level of research expenditures out of 920 public and private universities. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal. This news also came just before the new federal administration announced some executive orders and kind of new restrictions on federal research grant funding. Some of that has resulted in the halting of some research projects due to stop work orders at UW-Madison. You told the Board of Regents last week that there could be a significant impact on our universities due to some of these federal policy changes. What type of impact do you think?
Well, I think if you look at Madison, and I'm delighted that people are noticing the fact that Madison went from 8th to 6th. Its strategic goal was to get to number 6 by 2028. That was what's set forth in our strategic plan. They did it very much earlier than that. That is a tremendous accomplishment. I mean, I think sometimes we forget in Wisconsin that we have two R1s in this state, one at UW-Milwaukee and one at UW-Madison. R1 is the top tier for research institutions, and Madison has, the work that's being done here is absolutely world-class, and I think we can all be very proud of what's happened.
Are you concerned about those federal policy changes? Just one today about indirect costs from NIH?
I am very concerned. And NIH disclosed on Friday evening that they were going to reduce the support for those research grants. It's called indirect support, but it funds staffing, it funds capital infrastructure, it funds, when you're doing clinical testing, it funds that clinical testing, all associated with the research. They just, across the board, took it to 15%. They made that decision on Friday. It is effective this morning, on Monday morning.
What does that mean for Wisconsin?
I mean, it means that there could be less research being done at our universities. And when you think about the great work that's being done, just at Madison alone, cancer research, research for Alzheimer's disease, research in diabetes, and that goes on, the agricultural research that occurs, not necessarily funded by NIH, but does that cap on indirect support spread more broadly? And it also has, and I just step back and say, listen, I came out of the private sector, and this was not done in a business-like fashion, in my humble opinion. You announce something on Friday night that goes effective on Monday morning. You don't think about the unintended consequences of that. It doesn't look like there was a whole lot of analysis that went into it. Look, you mentioned earlier, we brought in a consultant to help us deal with structural deficits of our universities. We did that very methodically, understanding that the actions that we took were going to have impact on students, and impact on faculty members, and impact on the state of Wisconsin generally. In my opinion, you don't do that in a rapid fashion.
What's been your conversations like with the Wisconsin congressional delegation on these federal changes?
We're just starting those conversations. They've been ongoing. Our delegation, by and large, has been very supportive of the universities of Wisconsin. I think they understand the importance of our universities.
Across
the aisle. I think they understand the importance of our universities to the economic viability of our state, and we are going to continue to really try to get the support for our universities, because it's these types of steps. And listen, I'm not one to say that government can't be more efficient. It absolutely can be more efficient, but let's do so in a reasonable way, because what's happening right now, again, is no way to run the railroad, in my judgment.
We started the show talking about your travel across the state advocating for the biennial budget request. I know last week you shared that you'll be delivering a letter with more than 800 signatures from supporters, including 19 business organizations. How is your advocacy for this biennial budget request different this time around?
I think that the last biennial budget, I had only been in my role for a limited period of time. And I think we really, as I've talked to more business people, and that's the area that I came out of and spent 35 years in, having a good understanding of the business community in the state of Wisconsin, really started talking to them about, okay, what's important to you? What do you need? What do you need from us? How can we help support you? How can we help you as you try to grow your business? And it became just a natural that was where we would reach out. And I'm really pleased. We've got 19, and I think that number is going to continue to grow. Chambers, from the Madison Chamber of Commerce to MMAC and GMC and the Home Group in Milwaukee, but it's all across the state. It is all across the state where these chambers are coming from. And then the, you know, nearly 800 people who have signed individually, 500 of whom are, you know, affiliated with significant businesses across the state. And this is not just the large companies in Wisconsin. It's the smaller employers who still, by and large, employ more people than the larger ones do when they're aggregated. So it is really trying to build that grassroots support for the universities of Wisconsin. It's not for us. It's because we want to fulfill our mission to support the state.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us, President Rothman. We'll be checking in with you throughout the budget.
Sounds good. Thanks very much.
All right. And thank you to the viewers of Newsmakers. Be sure to tune in again as we highlight the issues and sit down with the decision makers who make a difference for all of us.
Nicolet Bank is honored to support all who strive to make communities great. You have been watching a production of Wisconsin Eye, your unfiltered window into legislative deliberations and public policy programming, where our mission is to provide Wisconsinites an opportunity to access the legislative process and connect with conversations that inform our citizenry. Please consider supporting our mission, and thank you for watching. Wisconsin Eye, policy made public.